I don't think so. To my face? Hello? I don't understand this. This is like a giraffe neck. Testing. Testing? Okay. Ready to go? Okay. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the regularly scheduled June 17th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed a student personnel matter, a stipulated expulsion order. Direction was given to staff, and the matter will be brought back before us at a future date. We also discussed the status of negotiations with our bargaining units, CSEA, SLCTA, and SEIU, and MEC. Opposed? And we have an abstention by Mr. Unger.
And
Mrs. Dickinson. Okay. And then we need to address approval of the minutes of June 3rd.
I'll move approval.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Buckman, seconded by Mr. Millar. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Yes.
Did we send copies of that resolution to the elected representatives, the presidential candidates, and the Tribune?
We have not obtained all the signatures we needed, so that will be done as soon as we have those.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Well, then, correspondence. At the time of publication, we had received one piece of correspondence from Pamela Zirion, letter dated June 3rd, a teacher in our district, commenting on her impending retirement and career with San Luis Coastal, and I would say that it was a very positive letter and much appreciated. And then this evening...
Madam President, I wonder if we could just take a moment and read that letter into the record.
I'd be happy to do so if you'd like me to.
Please, Mr. Millar.
Thank you. This is a letter to the President of the Board, John Spadafore, dated June 3rd. Dear John and trustees, as of June 13, 2008, I'm resigning from my position as teacher with San Luis Coastal Unified School District. I have taught in this district since 1976 and enjoyed every year. I was at Sunnyside for 9 years, and I have been at Hawthorne for 23 years. During that time, I have taught grades 1st through 6th. It's been a rewarding and fulfilling career. I think the best part of teaching is be able to reflect over the summer and start all over again with a new crop of students. Not many jobs allow you to get to an opportunity to do the same job again, but better the next time. I must say I am now a wiser, smarter teacher than I was when I first started. However, it's time for me to step aside for others. Thank you for the opportunity of a successful career. Pamela Zirion. Thank you.
So that was very nice to receive. And then tonight we've been submitted correspondence from, and you're going to have to pardon my pronunciation here, is it Mink or Minky? Minka? Winkler-Prinz, addressing some concerns that she has regarding algebra and geometry honors classes, and she's indicated that she would like to speak before the board in public comment. Okay, moving on, it is public comment, and we do have Minka Winkler-Prinz.
Good job on the name. My name is Minka Winkler-Prinz. I'm a San Luis Obispo High School parent. I'm here because of a plan to discontinue separate Algebra 2 and Geometry Honors classes at San Luis High. On May 15th, at the last San Luis Obispo High School Parent Advisory Committee meeting of the year, Principal Jones shared a plan under consideration to embed Honors Geometry and Algebra 2 classes. I've received no response to my concerns. I have, however, learned that the math department does intend to go forward with plans to embed Honors math classes next year. I've provided you all with a copy of the letter I wrote to Mr. Jones of my concerns about this plan. The bold text in the letter
quotes their rationale offered for the change, followed by my questions and concerns. While tonight's meeting is not a proper forum for me to read the list of my questions, I will summarize by saying that I am concerned that this change, in effect, discontinues the Honors Math program at San Luis High. I do not understand why this change is necessary, nor what it hopes to accomplish, and I am gravely concerned that it may have a negative impact both on the high-performing students and the low-performing math students, who will all be in one shared classroom. In its mission statement, the district, quote, guarantees to provide the highest quality programs and services which will give all individuals the opportunity to realize their full intellectual potential. As stewards of our children's education, I respectfully request that you review these intended curriculum changes to determine if they are indeed in the best interest of our students. Thank you.
Thank you. I hope you understand that the rules of public comment are such that we're not able to respond to you directly this evening. We're only able to take your information and then process it and give direction or ask questions of staff.
I understand. Later. Thank you very
okay.
much.
Okay. Thank you for coming. Linda McGregor.
Hello, I'm Linda McGregor, and I'm the executive director of Hotline 211, Slow Hotline. And I'm here tonight to thank you, and specifically, I have a thank you for several of the members of your team. Because of our recent bowl-a-thon, and amazingly, in this economic climate, it was a success. And the reason it was a success is because it's because of people. And people don't give to Hotline as much as they give to their friends and their family and wonderful people. And so I'd like Ms. Blakely to come up here and accept the award. Naomi, will you accept the award for the school district and your four bowling teams that you had? They were a top contributor among all of the teams that bowled. And I think we can't count because we're old, but we think it's 16 or 17 years that the teams have participated. Mm-hmm. I know we have Debbie Stiles. Mm-hmm. There's another Debbie.
Oh, boy.
Deb. Anyway, we see we're old.
It started with
Debbie Wacker.
Debbie Wacker, but yeah. It started with Sunnyside and then moved to Baywood, and then I moved to Los Ranchos, so we have Los Ranchos folks, and then we have district office folks, and we're hoping that it spreads even further.
We were very
embarrassing, but
okay. Because it's summer, we have no student representatives to the board tonight, but reports from school staff, administrators, and board members. Mr. Millar.
I'm going to violate my longstanding aversion to this, only to mention attending Pacific Beach's graduation, which I think is my eighth one of their graduations, and just some of the most terrific young people that I've worked with and been around graduated this year, including those near and dear to some of us up here, and it was just a heartwarming thing. The faculty shows how well they identify and understand the students there. The students, every year, but this year particularly, had a cohesion and a concern and a care and support for each other that was truly remarkable. And we graduated, what was it, 31? 32? Yeah, 32 students, which was the biggest one since I've been going. And it was a wonderful event. And I'm sorry to take your time, but I felt like this is something that I should report on. And everybody else, please proceed.
And for those who may be unaware, Pacific Beach is our continuation high school.
Award-winning
continuation high school. Mr. Unger.
Yeah, it's our six-year WASC accreditation. award-winning continuation school. And I was able to join several of the board members at Morrill Bay High for their wonderful graduation. 8 years and eight great days, sunny and everything at Morrill Bay. It's absolutely beautiful. I was also able to go to the community school graduation, and this is the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education Community School, not Pacific Beach. And it was also touching, and we do send several of our students to community school. It is an accredited community school, and it was just a great experience out at the Jack House. And then Dr. Valentine and I were both at the special education graduation for the County Office of Education students, the severely handicapped students. I was able to go to the Morrill Bay High Academic Awards the Wednesday night. Dr. Valentine and Dr. Matakovich were there as well, and that was quite an experience to see the students receive their academic honors and thousands of dollars in scholarship money to Morrill Bay High School graduates. And then also just being able to, the night before the day of the graduation, Diana Barnhart's retirement, after all the years that Diana was there, the staff at Los Osos Middle School put on a really nice little retirement party for her with alums and parents and everybody. So it was a great thing. And she moves on. By the way, she and her husband donated a $1,000 scholarship to Morrill Bay High, to a Morrill Bay High School student that will, I believe, study math and science and share that knowledge and love with others.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For me, I've been waiting for this year and for graduation. I've listened to my other board members who have been able to be on stage when their children have graduated, and I was able to be on stage as my daughter graduated, and nothing quite can surpass that feeling. So involved in the national parks at the public schools and give children who may not have a chance to experience the joy of camping and understand what it is to camp. And the best part of it is they would sleep at the school on Friday night, they would get up Saturday morning, and then they would plant a tree or do some kind of community service at their school because they won't be able to get up into the national parks to do it. So that was kind of a thrilling time. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Thank you. I'd like to thank Dr. Matakovich for organizing and putting together the Arts in the Classroom seminar that Walter and John Spadafore and Mark and I attended as well. And it was very exciting and looks very hopeful for the future to put together coalitions with some of our arts Good. Programs in the community to offer more arts opportunities and continue in addition to our VAPA classes. So thank you, Dr. Matakovich, for that. And I regret that I was not able to attend the Pacific Beach High School graduation because I've heard it's really a tearjerker. My own children were in their last day of school and had their own assemblies that I was required to attend. But I did enjoy shaking every one of those 550 graduates' hands from Morrill Bay High School and SLO High School. It's wonderful as a board member to be a part of that experience. That was really memorable, and thank you for sharing it.
Thank you. Mrs. Dickinson.
I did get to go to the entire concert of Laguna Middle School Choir and San Luis Obispo High School Choir, and sat by Dr. Valentine, and Mark was there too for a while. And it was a beautiful concert. Really enjoyed that. It's inspiring to hear the students sing. Just on a personal note, this is doesn't have to go in the minutes. Sabrina got a promotion. She works for Tramatola, and she did so well in the recent elections, as usual. The Valverde School District in San Diego County, which is San Marino District, San Marino City, whatever, Valverde School District, they had to get 55%, and she was the lead consultant on that and got 69%. So, and that's a pretty conservative district. So she was pulled in yesterday to say she's promoted from account representative to associate lead consultant. So she's doing really well in that career. She's working real hard. Sometimes, we can't, change the minutes unless it's a name or a date. But I had a little report that was left out about the art club. And so I brought a visual aid to make it, you know, more memorable. So here is a chair that I bought that was painted by Amanda Orling, and I bid on it, and I got it. And there were a lot of great chairs, though. I also bid on it, another chair, which I didn't get. But the person put the bid so much higher, she totally wanted that chair. So the art club does a good job of raising money and being an art club there at San Luis Obispo High School. That was an event at their open house. And I think that's all I need to talk about right now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Miller, status of the state budget.
Thank you, Ms. One disturbing piece that the legislature is starting to discuss more seriously is the cash management philosophy that the Department of Finance has advanced. And what the Department of Finance's basic premise was, and nobody gave it much chance of success for gaining legs, however it has, is that they will withhold the cash allocations to school districts until March for payment of appropriations for all programs, including K-3 classified reduction, categorical programs, and other allocations for revenue limit districts. What that does is it puts a serious cash flow kink in districts which are already lacking in cash flow. So theoretically, districts could be looking, if they don't get their normal August, September, October appropriations, a lot of school districts, more than 50% of them, will not have enough money to cover their payroll after the month of October. So the Department of Finance justifies its recommendation on the basis that if they can withhold the payments until March, they can save $55 million at the state level in interest that they would need to incur should they make the payments. $55 million versus their deficit factor of $17 billion is a drop in the bucket. And the pain it would invoke on school districts is tremendous. School districts traditionally could borrow, if they have a cash flow problem, from what they call tax revenue anticipation notes. However, for districts, one, that don't have a history of doing that, or two, haven't started the process already, they would run out of money before they could complete the cycle of necessary paperwork to borrow the money. So one of the things that districts are being asked to do, which the public would want to engage in also, is a notification to your local legislator that this represents a huge danger for the district to be able to continue to do its business where cash payments are necessary. It is probably one of the most onerous recommendations that have been made in a long, long time at school district level. Not having cash is tantamount to going bankrupt, and we wouldn't be able to pay our bills should we not be able to receive the money due us at the time it's supposedly due to us. So I'm speaking now as a generic us in terms of school districts throughout the state of California. So
can I follow up on that?
Be aware, that's the newest movement. Nothing else really has been accomplished. We look forward to a couple of things. One is August 15th, when we'll know what our property tax income is. We look forward to the end of August, when the state probably will be forced to pass some budget or another that will give us an indication of what our categorical funding is going to be. And we look forward to the resolution of this cash flow management issue and see what ends up happening with that.
Thank you. Mr. Millar.
Thank you. Let's say that hypothetically that they go forward with the cash flow management plan. Can we absorb the hit in our cash flow within our reserves?
Yes.
For economic uncertainty.
But talking about, aren't districts that are qualified unable to apply for trans as well?
Their cost of financing a trans would be, they would have to go through the county office to approve it. Assume the county office approves it, their interest costs would be increased because they are qualified.
Mr. Buckman.
There's a process, if I'm not mistaken, if you can help me, where the county office has to approve our budgets and say that the term they use is qualified, which is kind of weird, but if this were to happen, I guess this district might be okay, but most districts would not be able to show that they have the cash to cover, so that the county office would then be forced to send them a letter that says that they're...
Yeah, there's a process under AB 1200 where the county office is required to review all district budgets and then pass on its ability to meet its current and 2 years into the future obligations. There is a separate issue about cash flow. Okay, so your budget says, given that you're going to receive $50 million and you're going to pay out $49 million, theoretically you can cover your expenditures. Okay. However, what is a what is germane to all of that is having the money to pay the $49 million worth of expenditures. And the assumption has been that the history will continue. We get monthly appropriations of that which is due to us. If that changes, you're going to see districts which have depleted their cash accounts as a normal course of business through this summer. June 30th is the year end, and July 1st, the assumption was that you would receive your normal allocation. In fact, the governor has proposed that there would be, as Mr. Unger pointed out, a 45-day delay in receiving our money. However, having a six-month delay in receiving the money is extremely problematic for districts, and it would call into question whether or not they could meet any obligations beyond the month of October. Okay. And so you not only get a qualified condition on your financial statement, you might get a negative condition. And a negative condition leads almost directly to a state takeover. Thus, I don't know what the rationale is of the state. If they're going to withhold the money, cause states to become candidates for state takeover, they're going to have to come up with a loan to that district in order for them to pay their bills.
It seems more expensive.
Yeah. I can't even believe that it continues to have any discussion points whatsoever, but it does.
And towards your comment that people should write their legislatures,
I think it would be appropriate for people to express concern to their legislators. I'm not sure you want to write, call, fax, do what communicate is the key issue.
If I could mention, if they would go to SaveSLOCountySchools.org, they'll be able to do that with a single click on each of their legislators. It's a very easy way to contact them.
There you go.
And I appreciate that opportunity.
Okay, thank you. Special Education Programs Update, Jackie Kirk-Martinez.
Good evening, Board. I'm here this evening to provide you and the audience with an update of the process that we've made in regards to the transitioning of the county-operated special education programs. Corcoran from the County Office of Education, and she will be assigned to the county-operated classes that will be our classrooms this next year to assist with the transition. It helps to support the staff, the parents, the district in serving these individuals. Our student services department, as well as administration at C.L. Smith, Los Osos Middle School, San Luis High, as well as myself, has attended almost all of the annual IEP meetings of the students that are currently attending the county-operated classrooms. Attending those classes helps parents answer any questions that they might have and also helps the transition for us to understand the student through the IEP process and information. A lot of information is shared at IEP meetings. This helps us to determine any special circumstance materials or accommodations that these students might need so that we can be prepared at the school sites in the fall. The site administration and the county office administration have met several times during the school year. Transportation, school bus transportation has always been provided, not always, but in most recent years has been provided by our school district, so that was not new and there isn't a change in this. We have brought forward to the curriculum council the alternative standards and curriculum guidelines used for these students. The current county office autism supervisor and our district program specialist for autism will be transitioning the students with autism during this summer, during extended school year. I want to personally thank the personnel department, the IT department, instructional services department, administration and school staff at the sites in assisting with this transition. A lot of time, work, thoughtfulness, as well as personally thanking the county office staff and support services as well. The student services department, all of that staff has worked really hard in preparing lists, double-checking, getting emergency cards ready to input into PowerSchool, preparing special ordering supplies, assisting new staff, answering their questions, and collaborating with the county office staff. We will continue our efforts during the summer in preparing in-services for the fall for the new staff, not just the staff that transferred to our district, but also the new staff that we've hired, in helping them feel a part of our community, our school district, and helping them to understand our school district policies and procedures. We positively anticipate wonderful opportunities next year, and it's very exciting. So if you have any questions, I'm here to answer them.
Mr. Unger.
One of the questions I have regards support for the C.L. Smith administration. Is the district planning on providing additional support for C.L. Smith, recognizing that they'll be receiving two classes from the County Office of Education? And, of course, my experience is that both the clerical staff and the administrative staff will find their workload increase significantly.
In considering
that's AYP scores, and will we be able to account for that?
That's a very good question, Mr. Unger. We are looking into that, and the fortunate part is that with the CMA, which is the modified assessment in between the Kappa assessment for the severely handicapped and in between the STAR assessments, we're hoping that we are going to be able to provide more viable, reliable assessments for the middle-of-the-road students. These AYP classes, or these AYP, excuse me, scores were already embedded into that school site because those students are reported based on the services that they receive at a certain school site. So Smith students, regardless of who operated the classroom, was already counted into that AYP class scores.
Mr. Buckman.
I may have missed it, but are there locations that you're looking for the PEEP program? Can we
touch on that?
Well, I don't know if we'd allow to sneak preview it or not.
What do you mean sneak preview?
Well, I don't know whether it was under consideration or whether.
Looking at the severely handicapped population at Chris Jesperson School for this year, being located at CJ this year, we were looking at alternative locations for the following years, as well as our less intensive preschool program. Our less intensive preschool program has been located at Hawthorne and at Sunnyside. It has split the staff to 2 days each at both sites. And the staff, as well as the students requiring more than 2 days of 90-minute sessions, has been a real struggle over the last few years with the growing population and the growing needs. So after careful consideration, discussion with parents, discussion with staff, it was determined that we are able to provide a variety of preschool interventions if it was located at one school site. And again, with Chris Jesperson preschool site and the PEEP site, having the adult ed parent participation program together as a preschool center, this gives the staff a variety of options, meaning general ed, least restrictive, special education to the most restrictive. So, again, it's very exciting, the things that are going to be happening over the next 2 years.
It's rumored that the preschool will be in San Luis. Is that going to be problematic for the people on the coast to access that program? And, you know, gas prices being what they are, I know that we on the coast have concerns about making sure that access to programs throughout the community are open to everybody and not a problem for people to get to.
Absolutely. We did take that into consideration, and students' parents were also transporting their students if they needed more than two sessions a week into Hawthorne. So putting the PEEP program at Smith off of Los Osos Valley Road, parents' response was, oh, that's...
You may have answered, but I didn't hear. Do we intend to provide the additional clerical support that they will need?
The clerical support is provided by Student Services as well as the C.L. Smith staff currently. The change is the Power School support as well as the lunch count. Talking with Carol and Amy there, they are not feeling a concern with the nine students that will be at those two classes, but Amy knows that we're a phone call away and we will provide the support if necessary. We will be supporting the students, or Amy, through attending many of the IEP meetings as well. Okay. Amy rolls up her sleeves. You know, we are collaborating and talking all the time.
And will the district office support setting up IEPs and coordinating IEPs and rounding up the folks that need to come to them? You know, all the little nuts and bolts thing that take hours and hours and hours?
That is the county office organization invites and prepares paperwork differently than our district is already set up. Our district special day class teachers organizes and sets up the IEP meetings. They send out the notices, and they round up the people together. They send out all of the notifications, the IEP packets themselves, the special ed teachers. Differently from the County Office of Education, where their clerical staff does the majority of the IEP preparation of notices and coordination of meetings.
Okay, any additional questions? Okay.
Thank you,
Jackie. Moving on, item 4 under action discussion, declaration of need for fully qualified teachers.
Thank you. The State Commission on Teacher Credentialing requires that before we were to enter into any emergency permitting or limited assignment permits or a intern program, either district run or university run, that we file a declaration of need for fully qualified educators. We hardly ever really need to use this except for internship credentials, and even though the board item says that we project maybe 2 to 5 emergency permits, at this time it doesn't, based on the applications we're receiving, we probably will not need any emergency permits. But we do want to kind of prepare ourselves just in case, and so that's what this item is about. We put on here, there's a brand new emergency permit, which is called a visiting faculty permit. This is a new thing allowed by the state of California, kind of intended for very hard to fill technical or CTE types of positions. So, for example, we are advertising right now for a part-time auto instructor for Morro Bay High School. Those are very difficult to come by, people credentialed in that area for a part-time job. So a visiting faculty permit would allow, for example, a college instructor, say a Cuesta College or Hancock College instructor who has credentialed for junior college, which does not require the same credentialing, but has done the jobs, taught the classes, to get an emergency permit. So we put 2 on that just in case we may need to in any of our ROP.
Discussion. Okay, seeing none.
Question on that?
Certainly.
Mr. Robinette, on the CLAD, is our district doing any in-service or organizing classes for, how's that working?
Yeah, this is a problem area for us because even though we put on here the need to maybe get some emergency permits, we are fully aware that we have a significant number of individuals that should be getting a EL authorization that are permanent or have been with us a long time or tenured teachers, and so we are definitely working hard on that. Rita Delkiskamp has a game plan that's beginning actually this summer. We have teachers taking a CTEL preparation course, and over the course of the next year and 2 years, we plan on especially targeting our secondary teachers first, offering CTEL preparation. That's the name of the test that now qualifies somebody for a CLAD credential. CTEL preparation courses that we'll be running ourselves. We have, 4 people that are now qualified to offer those programs, those preparation programs. And our plan is to offer those programs to our teachers who need that, have them pay for the test, and then reimburse for the test once they pass it, so that we're kind of working with our teachers association and with their educators to get ourselves fully qualified. So that's our game plan, to support that, but also to start requiring it where we need to.
Any other questions? Okay, then we have a motion on the floor, moved by Mr. Millar, seconded by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, passes 7-1. The next item, approval of additional modified secondary courses for 2008-2009. Mrs. Delkiskamp.
Hi.
6-0.
Beg your pardon. Did I say 7-1?
That's amazing.
I don't know what I was thinking. Okay.
Okay. Item 5. As noted in the board item, staff is requesting your approval to change the name of one of the courses and add a grade level to the other course.
Mr. Buckman.
I'll make a motion that we change the name of one course and add a grade level to the other course.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mrs. Dickinson. Is there any public comment? Okay, seeing none. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. Okay. Item number 6. Award of bid number 222, sports field rebuild at Laguna Middle School. Mr. Parker.
The Youth Sports Association, which is a collection of various sports teams that get together and coordinate their activities and their use of district facilities, as well as paying a lump sum annual field usage fee instead of an hourly fee. They put together money every year for field maintenance projects. They have a little leftover from previous years and a little for this year. And they wanted to do a larger.
One of the things I'm just curious about is it said, due to the inclusion of bid alternates, could you tell me what a bid alternate is and what that means in terms of the.
It's either an additive or a deductive alternate. In this case, they're deductive alternates. And they're little, small scopes of work that, because we're concerned about the overall budget, we identify they're not absolutely required for the project, but there would be nices. Okay. And as a result, if we knew the bidders and we wanted to work with a particular bidder and not another bidder, we could juggle the alternates and affect the outcome of the bid. Therefore, we're not allowed to know the names of the bidders.
Yeah, sure.
Hold on, quite understanding that. Okay, I guess I have a question. The successful bidder, there's quite a spread between bidder B and bidder E, and I'm assuming that the bid is comprehensive and you've checked the whole thing and
yes,
and they've got everything we want in there for the stated amount.
The bid specs are tight, and I was pleased to see that the three lowest bidders were actually grouped pretty closely for this size project.
Okay. And then my other question would be, from what source would we get the funds?
This would be from our capital facilities account, measure and modernization savings.
Thank you. Mrs. Dickinson.
It looks like you're recommending bidder B. My question is this going to be union labor on this project?
It's either required to be union labor or prevailing wage per public contract code.
Okay. What's the difference between those? How does that work out for workers, union wage or prevailing wage?
Comparable wages, but it doesn't require union membership. So you can be a non-union contractor. You have to pay comparable to union wages to your employees.
But they don't have necessarily the benefits and protections of unions.
There would be non-union members. I can't even tell you which contractor here would be a union member or not, but I know that they're all required to either pay union wages or prevailing wage.
Thanks.
Mr. Buckman.
Let's see. How do I do this? I find it interesting that on our board is John Spadafore, who is unable to be with us tonight, who was one of the driving forces behind the Youth Sports Association, and I was lucky enough to be part of the founding group. So in sort of like in John's name, I'd like to make this motion to accept this bid.
Thank you. Do we have a second? Okay, moved by Mr. Buckman, seconded by Mr. Unger. Is there any public comment? Seeing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. Item 7, planning for the board workshop on July 15th, 2008. Dr. Valentine.
Thank you, Madam President, clerk. Just wanted to provide the board an opportunity tonight as a group to provide any input that it might wish to share regarding the development of topics for a board retreat session that we will be holding on July 17th. I think one issue we would like
talking about, we're still standing around in the room, and we did ultimately manage to get to some of them. But so I've got kind of mixed feelings about the need for facilitation. Of course, we haven't had an actual outbreak of physical violence yet, but that may be attributable to the facilitator. But so that's kind of my feeling on it. I'm very unsettled about it. I don't have a strong preference one way or another, and I'd love to hear what everybody else thinks.
Mr. Unger.
Perhaps we could talk to the facilitator. I'm for a facilitator. Perhaps we could talk to the facilitator and explain Mr. Millar's concerns about. And I found that, too, that we usually get to the end of the meeting before a lot of the meat that we really feel like we want to talk about is there. So I would support having a facilitator there, but I would also support us saying, can we get to some of these things? Well, I don't know. It takes a while for issues of substance to get out a lot of times, and I'm not sure if there's a way of getting those issues out. I don't think that we would get the issues out any quicker, if at all, without a facilitator. So I would be in for.
So are you saying that you'd like to pass on the circle of trust and then move directly to the substantive matters?
I think we need to get our safari going a little bit quicker.
Okay. Mrs. Dickinson.
I think that our facilitator did change the tactic a little on the last meeting that we had here on site, and was much more letting everyone here kind of move it in directions that they wanted to go. Didn't you think so, Walter? I thought it was different than the other one that was so orchestrated. So I think we're going in the direction that you would like, and it seems like we kind of do need a neutral person to chair the meeting instead of, I mean, who's going to say your turn's up? She's really good at that, you know, like, okay, that's enough from you now. And
maybe that's what I want, president or the clerk.
That's not a neutral person, really. And if we don't have a facilitator, I think we should have Dr. Valentine.
I vote for
but
that.
She's not exactly neutral. So there you go.
Well, I find Adrian and Chris's point persuasive, so I agree. But we should have a facilitator. And tell her, him or her, to bring their elephant rifle.
Okay. The only thing that I would add, I guess, is that the board has submitted, several board members have submitted excellent suggestions for topics for the board retreat. And I'm wondering if anyone cares to share any of the topics that they proposed, because I think they're all really valid and appropriate. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Having not been to one of these meetings before, I'm not sure what the scope is of all this, but I'd like to share a couple because they may be relevant to some of the conversations tonight. One has to do with I'd like to see us discuss ways that we could best ensure a safe and appropriate educational environment, especially at our middle schools and high schools, relating that would, I think, help us to accomplish servicing all of our children. As our speaker here tonight mentioned, that we don't disadvantage our high-achieving students in our efforts to close the achievement gap.
Thank you. Mrs. Dickinson.
Those sound like wonderful ideas. I'm wondering if they would be like advanced agenda more for a regular board meeting instead of this board meeting is where we kind of look at how we work as a team and analyze and evaluate our processes, really, rather than, you know, substantive issues that involve the whole district. But I like those ideas, and maybe you could bring them up again in an advanced agenda, but I could hear what the rest of the board thinks.
I agree with Adrienne, and I think she expressed it very well, that they're good things for us to discuss more in the policy vision board role and setting those things. And I think that Adrienne's right. This is more of board is internal dynamics and how we get at things and how we process things. So I think they're good topics, but I think they're, as Adrienne said, more for the regular board meeting setting.
It's a meeting for board self-evaluation.
And it's kind of an example. If I could, I'll share mine.
Certainly.
I indicated that we discussed the conduct of board meetings, discussion of expulsion hearing process, that we review the CSBA governance standards and role of a board member. And in fact, the CSBA evaluation, self-evaluation that Dr. Valentine provided for us by email, I think gets to those issues for me. And then any other changes we might want to make in the way the board conducts their business.
Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, in looking over some of the ideas that folks shared individually, it looked like there was an interest in sort of three broad kinds of topics, and the various things that you suggested may fall under those. The first one deals with the issue of the board's role and responsibilities and how those things play out in the actual operations of the district. The second was that the issue of meeting conduct and agenda building, that the whole how do we get to what business we want to do, and then how do we conduct the business once we've decided what it is that we want to do. And then a kind of overarching one that I think may have touched on some of Dr. Eisenrath Rogers' ideas of just how do we participate in the visioning of the district, not so much to establish the vision of the district, because those may well be board individual board items themselves, but rather in the functioning of the board, what is our responsibility in establishing that vision? Maybe if we play with those kind of general topics, we'll get into a lot of things that that all of you have showed interest in.
Okay, I really appreciated everyone's topics, that I received. Item 13, action on a claim against the district, Stan Griniger. Item 14.
I'd like to pull 14, please.
Okay. 14 is approval of the 2008-2009 consolidated application for funding categorical aid programs, part one, pulled by Mr. Unger.
Did you want to pull 14?
15, approval of revised local educational agency LEA plan. 16, approval of summer field and study trips. 17, approval of San Luis Obispo High School agricultural vocational education incentive grant application. Would someone like to move approval of items 8, 9, 10, 12, 13, 15, 16, and 17?
Yes.
Moved by Mr. Unger, and I'll second that. So moved by Mr. Unger and seconded by myself. Those in favor? Those opposed? 6-1. Okay, item 11. Mr. Buckman.
Yes, I asked only to have this pulled because I was, and it's my own fault, unaware that we had, or maybe I'm not. Let me ask it as a question. Do we have videotaping on all of the buses at this time? So this is a replacement?
It's a replacement. We have capabilities on all buses.
Okay. We don't necessarily, when we're riding the bus, necessarily know which one has the camera.
We have capabilities at this
Thank you. I appreciate that. I will never misbehave on a school bus. And is there a notice or something given to parents that they so they know that we have this capability?
I honestly don't know.
In the annual parent notification booklet, we notify them of the taping.
Okay.
I appreciate you pulling this, Mark. I guess I misunderstood it at first. So we're not showing students videos as they ride around on the buses. Lion King.
Or, no.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Usually the person who pulls it moves it.
At this time, I'd like to move approval of consent item 11.
Moved by Mr. Buckman, seconded by Mr. Millar. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 6-1. Item 14. Approval of 2008-2009 consolidated application for funding categorical aid programs, Part 1. Mr. Unger?
And what attracted my attention on this one was on page 14.2, Title 2, Part A, Teacher Quality, where we talk about professional development, improve teacher and principal quality through professional development, including reduced class sizes, and the methodologies and things like that. First thing I'd like to point out is that we share some of this training with some of our private schools, with Old Mission School and Mission Prep. The second thing I'm wondering is, when we talk about professional development, in this case, as a part of the grant application, are there restrictions or are there requirements that the grantor provide us in defining what professional development is and what high-quality professional development looks like?
No. I mean, it should be research-based whenever we are dealing with instructional strategies. But your question was, I haven't received any feedback about concerns about the professional development that we're offering. The feedback I've received is how do we coordinate it and keep it focused and not overwhelm and have a plan that's multi-year.
I guess I loathe to use the term WestEd. But that's really what I'm driving at here. And how does WestEd fit into this and that part of professional development? And is that part of the thing, what we're talking about in terms of high-quality professional development as required by the Title II?
If I may, Rita, some of this occurred, I think, maybe before Rita jumped on this, but the WestEd professional development model is a highly researched model, highly recommended model, and it has a significant sort of track record of results. We're in the sort of unique position that we have struggled with this particular model in terms of being able to capture some of the imagination of the folks who are going through it. The debates that we've had regarding WestEd are not so much whether it's research-based, but what people's personal reactions to participating in it have been.
I have one comment.
Mrs. Dickinson.
Well, I think research is really important in education. Everything seems to be research-based, and divergent outcomes are research-based. So don't you think it's kind of an overused term in terms of a validation for what goes on in education in general, a little bit?
Well, I think we need to have balance. I know that many of the grants we apply for and funds we receive have that stipulation that we use a research-based approaches. But some balance can come, for example, in something we're doing our in-service for science. You know, aside from adopting that, we also surveyed the teachers who are going to be participating in this in-service to find out what do they already know, what experience do they already have, what do they expect.
I guess I'm saying, too, that, yeah, we need other criteria and ways to choose things. Aside from just that, I know that you are doing that. Thank you.
And if I could just respond for a little bit to that, I think research-based tends to be a term that describes what you like doing. Yeah. and it is overused because I think most methodologies in professional development have to exist in a context that's ready to accept that particular methodology. It isn't something that works in and of itself. It works in a culture, and it works in a climate, and it works in some unique circumstances. And the fact that something is research-based in one context and one climate does not guarantee that it'll work in another one.
Dr. Matakovich?
Yes, and Rita, if you could for a minute just give a brief overview of the training that we're going to be offering our staff using these funds to improve the quality of instruction of our teachers and working with English learners who are our targets.
Okay, well, just briefly as far as English in their classrooms.
Thank you, Mr. Unger.
And I'd just like to close by letting the public know that if they want to understand what No Child Left Behind really means, that this is an item that they should look up at the district office. There are, I believe, 154 requirements tied in with the consolidated application, some of which folks might consider onerous. And in addition, the information that we are required to report is very interesting and very telling about our school district. So I would just invite the members of the public, if they have a chance, to take a look at what our consolidated application really is.
Do you want to move this one?
Yeah. And I'll go ahead and move approval of item number 14.
And I'll second. Moved by Mr. Unger and seconded by myself. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-1. Moving on. The advance agenda. Does anyone have...
Technically, she is correct, because the one is absent, and it's recorded that way in the minutes.
You're doing it right.
Oh, Mrs. Holmes, you are so good. Okay. Does anyone have anything they'd like to put forward as an advance agenda item? Mr. Buckman.
Yeah. At this time, what I'd like to do is, first of all, thank the administration for sending us the completed California Healthy Kids survey. I couldn't sleep for several nights, so I got to read most of it and sleep. But much of it was very interesting, and we're at the, I guess, at a period now where the school sites have their site data, and I guess that'll be brought to us at some point. But I'd really like this to come back as an agenda item. It ties into two of the sections of the strategic plan. Section one, two of the goals, the student achievement and well-being and community confidence. And what I really envision, while I think it's very important for the school sites to deal with this and for the district to deal with this, I really feel that this is not, the issues that are being raised in this document are not going to go away without a tremendous amount of community support and possibly even some kind of community action. And so as we get the data from the school sites nailed down and what they need, I'd really like to have this brought back as an agenda item.
I would support that.
Okay, and so Mr. Buckman is supported by Mr. Unger in that request. Mrs. Dickinson?
Maybe I can't say this until it's on the agenda, but last year I brought up that I think calling this Healthy Kids Survey is, certain kids from answering or sort of predispose them to answer in a certain way. And I think it should be called Real Kids Survey. But I'm...
Can I get some clarification on that before we move on to
Dr. Valentine.
One? Mr. Buckman, you want us to revisit the Healthy Kids Survey in what light?
Yes, it's my understanding that the next step will be that this data is broken down by school site information.
Well, it's totally in order. It encompasses the concern that you all suggested would be an advance agenda item that I raised as well. And just like to add to that, safety issues that relate to children getting to school and from school that are within our jurisdiction, I like to look at those issues as well.
I would accept that as an addition.
So then is the suggestion that we, when we revisit the Healthy Kids survey, we would also incorporate in that same meeting a discussion about safety to and from. Okay, so we can combine those two agenda items. Is that acceptable? Into one? Okay, great. Anything else?
I have something.
Oh, Mrs. Dickinson.
I liked Dr. Eisendrath Rogers' agenda suggestion about the benchmark issue, just to discuss that, since it is a discussion that's going on and percolating in our district, and I think it would be good to have a discussion about it.
I'll second that. And with an interest in looking at both how the reason we do it, which is our intention, our desire to monitor our students' progress, but also what effect it has in the classroom in terms of learning and teaching time.
And can I add something to that? I would be interested in the district looking at making space for some alternatives in our curriculum delivery, and that while benchmarks may be appropriate and important for some classrooms and teachers, that there would be a way that a very experienced teacher or a especially gifted independent type teacher, maybe even a new teacher who's that way, could make a case to opt out of that process and do something a little alternative and independent, just to talk about what that would look like and would we want that or not. And I've thought of, I've already mentioned before, I mean, I'm talking about high school and all along, but and this kind of goes with that idea I've had for a while about teach. It wouldn't have to be teach, but I think there should be pockets of truly alternative education somewhere in the district where I imagine teach, for instance, being non-graded, like not fourth, fifth, sixth grade, but all those kids together in a non-graded, free from the standards of each grade, in sort of a three-year cycle on literature and science and all those history and all those things. I think that having a few places like that would meet some of our students' needs better. Some kids would do well and some teachers would have a great time with that. And some people wouldn't like that. But just to have more options and alternatives. So we don't really want to be a district where everyone's on the same page at the same time. It's mandated. I don't think that's what we want. And so if we're headed that way, I would be worried about that. And Dr. Matekovich is frowning, so you can see this would be a way for you to clear up if we're not doing that, you could have a chance to say.
Didn't we already do this in academic freedom?
Well, it's not resolved then.
Okay, so then you've received direction.
Yeah, a quick response, if I could. I think we're from a staff viewpoint, where we have some difficulties and suggestions that come forward is when the suggestions are too specific. They get down to going to solutions. It becomes helpful to us to define problems and then bring solutions to you rather than to go with a solution in mind and with the understanding that we would try to make that particular one happen. So if we can kind of expand that. I like the idea of talking about alternatives more than whether it should be ungraded or non-graded or that kind of thing.
Well, I like that word alternatives. That's fine with me. That sounds good.
Okay, anyone else?
I didn't hear that as an agenda item, by the way.
You did or did not?
I did not.
Okay, well, we have a suggestion. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers has put forward a desire to have an agenda item regarding benchmark testing.
I have that one.
And that was seconded by Mrs. Dickinson?
Yeah, it was seconded, right. We have the safety issues and the Healthy Kids survey broken down by school and community response to that.
Rolled into one agenda item.
Right. And I was hearing more comment from Ms. Dickinson than agenda item. So.
All right.
Okay. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Thank you. I would like to just bring this other one since you encouraged me to do that, all of you, which has to do with I have a larger issue, and then I would need to narrow it, I think. But the larger issue is how to keep the district focused on learning and achievement for all students, even as we seek to close the achievement gap and educate EL learners. And that is to continue to offer and staff honors-type classes for our high-achieving students so that our efforts to close the achievement gap do not disadvantage them in their goals and intellectual pursuits. And I want to note that Minka Winkler-Prenn's comments tonight are consistent with this, and so I sort of want to focus it on her comments and then also have a more general discussion. I just fear that if we put this off to a future agenda, it'll be too late to address her concerns that she raised tonight. And I find it somewhat ironic that we have an agenda item tonight. Item number 5 was we were asked to approve the change of the name of a course. And what Dr. Winkler-Prenz has brought to our attention is that apparently an entire honors program is being embedded into a general math program without our approval. And I don't know how that comes about, but that is what she's brought to our attention. So if there's a way to specifically look at that and what we can do or should hear or learn about it, I feel like we need to address that.
If I may.
Mr. Unger.
Do we not annually approve courses for the high schools? And the concerns that were expressed earlier, and I think the concerns that you're talking about right now, would fall under that perhaps umbrella. I'm wondering if that...
And it's certainly something we can bring to the board and discuss, but the existence of the course and the quality of the course... stay intact, I guess, in that particular format. Some places do that in order to actually offer the courses because there are so few students that can enroll in certain courses that by consolidating courses, and it isn't just honors algebra 2 and geometry, but a lot of the career technical education classes that have multiple layers of proficiency being addressed are also consolidated so that the course can actually be offered because on its own it wouldn't have enough enrollment to make it viable. Morro Bay High School has done this particular format in the past, and I think San Luis Obispo High School is jumping to it. I can't comment, and maybe Dr. Matakovich can, on whether or not this is a response to an enrollment issue or whether it's seen as simply a way to create a lot of mobility between kids who discover they're over their head in an honors class, being able to shift without changing the period of the day, without changing the teacher, without changing the assignment, or kids who are excelling in a college prep class being able to move fluidly into a higher level of performance within the same room, and that there are some advantages to having that fluidity in the same class. From Mary's language here, it sounds like it's more that explanation than the enrollment explanation, but that's where we are.
I guess I have a question then. Students who take, it's my understanding that students who take AP honors classes, that those classes are viewed differently at the UCCSU level, and that it affects, they get extra credit on their grades. And so is what's being proposed at San Luis High School that we're going to run a dual role, and so some of the kids will be getting AP credit and some of the kids will only be getting regular credit? I'm not sure how you do that.
They have a 5.0 grade. AP is AP, and unless it's called AP, it doesn't give you AP credit.
But, is that the same as honors?
But honors gives you a 5.0 grade point option. College prep does not, so the highest grade you can get for your GPA depends on which of those you're in.
So I guess the question is, students in this new class that's being proposed, will they be seen as honor students, or will they be seen as college prep students, or will you be running some kind of dual role, and will the teacher be grading papers differently?
Yeah.
Well, that's the question I think that Dr. Eisengart's, Catherine Rogers is asking is how is it that we're changing the title of a course, but we have a whole almost program being changed, and we won't meet again until August. So how does the board have input on this issue? If we're supposed to, I mean, maybe we're not.
Well, in December and January of this school year, you approved our course of studies. And for the last 3 years, Morro Bay High School has been delivering geometry, college prep, and geometry honors in one class setting by differentiating the instruction. They've preserved the integrity of both courses of studies and been allowed, as Dr. Valentine explained, to be able to move kids according to how they've been able to realize their course's objectives. We do the same.
With support. So has it been supported?
Well, I'm not sure what it is anymore. What is it we're being asked whether we support or not?
Well, the general agendized issue was to look at all the ways in which our efforts to close the achievement gap might have a deleterious effect on our high-achieving students.
If any.
Okay.
If any.
If any.
Yes. Well, I don't know. I mean, it sounds to me more like a goals objective setting exercise and maybe getting some feedback from administration on that, on the situation, if it exists, would be a preliminary step. I just, you know, there's agenda items, and then there's kind of the broad global educational picture, and that sounds broad and global to me. And I have a harder time getting my hands around, my brain around the more global issues than the nuts and bolts ones. That doesn't mean we should just do nuts and bolts, but that's kind of what my concern is.
Can I make it more specific then? Can I restate it?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Could I ask for a future agenda item specifically on the subject of the embedded math program at San Luis Obispo High School and whether it was described to us accurately in terms of what the parents who are bringing ninth graders to San Luis High School this fall were expecting in terms of the math program or not.
That sounds like it could be a Friday packet thing, and then there could be a follow-up, give the administration an opportunity to tell us in Friday packet exactly how, you know, this transpired and how it relates to the courses that we approved. And then if you see a need to go further with an agenda item, we could do that at that time. Does that work for you?
Yeah, you know, the only thing I would put out about this is I really want to make a case for putting the strategic plan around whatever conversations we have about programmatic concerns. I think what Catherine raises is a perfectly appropriate strategic plan goal, issue, objective, however you want to talk about it. I feel sometimes that we drift, like there's the strategic plan and then there's stuff we want to do in the district, and they're not separate conversations. There's only one conversation, and it is the strategic plan. And staff moves on the basis of the strategic plan. I know that some of the issues that came forward were how can we address issues that aren't in the strategic plan, and I realize there are urgent issues that come forward that need immediate responses. This may be an example of one. But in terms of global kinds of things, strategic planning is what staff will do for San Luis Coastal. The other thing that I would want to emphasize is that as specific as certain objectives are in the strategic plan, we went to some pains anyway to communicate that the entire infrastructure of the school district continues, and that the honors programs and that the alternative educations and that the, you know, those kinds of things. I think sometimes there is a...
And this is where I'd like to frame it, so you maybe can wrap your mind around, or someone could maybe wrap one's mind around it. On this closing the achievement gap, to talk about what the definition of that is. And we've tended to define it as some kids are testing here, and we want them to test here in reading and math, for instance. And for some reason, they're not moving up quickly enough. And that's kind of a narrow interpretation, and maybe that's all we wanted to talk about. But I have mentioned before, and I think there's a different way of looking at the achievement gap of
the gap between a student, where a student is achieving and where he could be achieving his own individual potential, finding what he's good at or she, and doing that, which means a full spectrum education program. You have to have, you know, music and art and ROP agriculture and just all of this, you know, possibilities for students. And we do have a wonderful program. So each student would find his area of giftedness and fully develop that.
Adrienne, I don't know if this is clarifying the agenda.
Well, it's talking about, so, but this is talking about what you're talking about. So you take gifted kids in math or whatever area, you know, maybe they're testing right here and they're doing great, but in their own, there's a gap between what they're doing and what they could be doing. So if you just talk about what is the definition of closing the achievement gap and are we achieving that definition in our strategic plan, would that be specific enough?
Yes, for all students. I think you're exactly right.
Okay,
well,
then.
If I may.
Mr. Millar.
It may be more specific, but I don't agree with your definition of the achievement gap. My understanding of the achievement gap, and I'll try to be brief, is a disparate performance among certain socioeconomic racial groups that are pretty clear in a lot of educational testing. So I think what you're talking about is sort of differentiated learning, individual potentiation, you know, which is great and awfully global. So I'm not sure yet what we're bringing in to talk about. And Catherine, you know, after my comment about it being too global, I thought you got too specific, getting down to, you know, the math, the embedded math program at Slow High. I mean, remember, we've got the site folks making decisions, and we've got the administration, you know, influencing those decisions and supporting them or modifying them. And I think that's where we've got a, that's where our first line of the board understanding issues that come to us needs to be. So I thought that was a little too specific, and I kind of liked how the idea of getting some more information about it and understanding the concerns better, because I don't at this point. But so that's kind of my observation on the discussion so far.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I'm not sure if we still have an item to be voted on, but let me clarify it in this way then. It was helpful to have Ms. Dickinson's...
If you view education as kind of a closed circuit, so that whatever amount of energy goes into someone or something comes at the expense of some other thing, the question of how to not do that may be a difficult question to answer, because the energy that does flow towards students who are struggling at one end of the spectrum may well come out of energy that goes into students who are struggling at the other end of the spectrum. And I think a difficult question, and maybe it gets embedded in the item itself, is what if you discover that paying attention to someone does, in fact, reduce the effect you have on other children? How do you decide whether or not to continue doing that or not doing that? I mean, that to me would be a really interesting conversation. One I wouldn't want to necessarily own, though.
And I think that conversation, it's the squishy ball. You know, if you squeeze one end, it's going to pop out the other end. And by paying attention to either low achievers or high achievers, what about the great mass in the middle? So
now I'm confused.
I would only go out and if you pay attention to everybody, does it wind up hurting everybody?
Do we have an advance agenda item that has received support of two board members?
Well, I think you could have a discussion on it. It's not really necessarily an action item, but it seems like it's worthy of a school board to discuss an issue like that.
I would bring it back that I think it's connected to the whole issue of visioning and the strategic plan. And the strategic plan is not set in stone, and those are the kinds of things that you can invite in that discussion. And I think the way to get it in front of the board, because I think that's what the discussion here is, to have a discussion very early on the strategic plan, its goals, its progress to date, and any modifications that we want to place to it. And I think it has to occur early in the year, September. For suggestion.
Is that satisfactory?
It is. However, I do want to just say that, because we're talking about September, I'm not sure I understand how a Friday packet discussion of this issue of the embedded courses at Slo High is going to, could possibly have any effect on whether this program goes forward. And as I point out, you know, again, we've been asked to approve the title of something, and here's something very substantially impacting a program, and a lot of students who are coming to Slo High School next fall expecting an honors program that has a certain curriculum that, to my understanding from reading this material, curriculum for an honors math program has at least two more chapters that's covered compared to the curriculum for a prep program. That's a curriculum change, and we're not having an opportunity to address it, and students are coming into a program expecting one thing and getting another.
I was first.
Walter?
You know, the linkage between the fact that we voted on a change of course title today and that somehow we should be voting on site decisions about how they're going to deliver curriculum is there.
Because it might be fine.
It's my understanding that school districts produce and publish courses of study. So I would be very interested to know, either tonight or extremely soon, what the course of study was that was presented to the parents at Morro Bay High School, and if this is substantially different. Because the feeling that I'm getting is that this is substantially different. And if what Dr. Matakovich is telling us is that we as a board approved in December something that went out to parents, then our name's on it, our vote's on it, and I'm not sure that we don't have a responsibility to monitor this.
I agree. But how do we
get it back?
Well, you see if there's a second for that item in August.
Okay, is Dr. Matakovich?
Yeah, well, what staff would like to do is clarify their position and their intent to deliver the core instruction that you've approved. We'd like to do that in a Friday packet and put that together for your review. If after you've read the rationale that's attached to their decision to deliver the program this way, as Morro Bay High School has been doing for the last 3 years, then certainly you would bring it back as an agenda item to be discussed.
And if I may, I think this would be an excellent real-world example for us to discuss at the board retreat about what our role as board members and the board is. To me, it's helpful to have something that is live and on the table in front of us. So maybe the Friday packet would flesh out my understanding and knowledge, or our understanding of it, and then we could have the more general discussion at the board retreat.
Okay. Then that's what we'll do. We'll take it in a Friday packet. We'll discuss it at the board retreat. If after the Friday packet there is continued interest in having it as a future agenda item, then that can be brought forward.
Marilyn, I may just want to make sure that we're clear on one thing, or I'm clear on it. We wouldn't be discussing it for action and decision at the board retreat. We would be discussing the more general topic of a process. Thank you, Chris.
It would be, if after we received the administration's information in Friday packet, board members still have an interest in bringing it forward as a future agenda item, then that another opportunity then will present itself at the next board meeting.
But nonetheless, Walter's suggestion that we use this as a case study at our board retreat, I think, is really valuable.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Okay, then we have handled advanced agenda. If there's nothing additional, I was hoping to say that I will endeavor in the future, given the opportunity, to lengthen the board meeting. That was about 40 minutes ago, so I think I'll not say that. I'll just say this meeting is adjourned.